Welcome to another episode of the Tech Exceptions Show. In today's show, we have an exceptional guest. We have Roger Noble joining us. Roger is the CEO of Zygami. And in this conversation, we're going to be talking about how the company is transforming how medical images are used in health AI. So, Roger, welcome to the show.
Great. No, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Awesome. It's good to have you here. I want to start off by asking you, what does Zygami do? What problem are you guys trying to solve?
Sure, yeah. So, Zygami is a image visualization platform, and kind of what that means is that we allow you to visualize and understand really large collections of images in a very visual and simple way. And what a lot of our users use Zygami for is to identify patterns and correlations, outliers in these kinds of data sets to help them build up and curate data sets and training data sets in particular for building machine learning algorithms. The problem, I guess, that we're trying to solve is that we make kind of large unstructured data sets more accessible and more usable by anyone, regardless of their technical skills. So you don't need to be a developer or a data scientist to really visualize and understand these sort of large and complex data sets.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, I was just going to say, we mostly focus on the medical imaging side of things. It's an area that's really kind of where we came out from originally, having spun out from the University of Oxford over in the UK. And there's a real big need, I guess, within healthcare for AI. And the problem and the challenge there is that it's really difficult to, build these kind of models for, finding, disease types, tumors, those kinds of things in medical images. But also it's really difficult to make sure that they work correctly and that they're actually safe to use in the real world. And so we're sort of building tooling and sort of supporting that ecosystem through data visualization.
A lot of us, when we have to build a model, we rush into quickly building a model, but we're wondering, okay, why is it not working? I've been tweaking it for a whole week. It's not working, but we don't realize, right. Oh, by the way, you have bad data, so you can tweak this all you want. It's not taking you anywhere. So right. I like the fact that Zygami is actually making it user-friendly because even when you find the tools, it's hard to really figure out how to utilize it. That's like a whole learning experience. So who are your customers? Because you mentioned it's a solution that makes it easy for somebody who's not a data scientist to utilize. Are these doctors? Are these researchers? Who uses Zygami solution?
Yeah, so it's mostly researchers or clinicians that do research as part of their work, or data scientists, or even sort of software engineers. Anyone that needs to work with lots of images are sort of our customers. I mean, at the moment, we have users using and building their own models in a really wide variety of industries, from sort of life sciences, plant phenotyping is a big area. Marine biology is another one, and we're sort of doing a project looking at shark fins and identifying sharks based on the unique kind of thumbprint that they have with their fins, all the way from manufacturing and more recently automotive as well. So it's really diverse. Yeah.
Images
are everywhere. Yeah.
That's very impressive. And I didn't even know sharks have fingerprints, so that's something to look up after this. So when dealing with medical image, what are the key challenges that you face when you look at a lot of these medical images? Because some are coming from X-rays, ultrasound, mammogram. I can't keep up with all the different images that are out there in the medical field.
Yeah, I mean it's definitely a challenge, and in some ways maybe we picked the hardest challenge to start with first, because yeah, you can think of images that you might take with a phone, with a camera, they are they're sort of a two-dimensional image, but very often in medical we're working with three-dimensional, four-dimensional type images where it could either be a stack of images. It could be like an MRI or a CT, which is a volume, or it could be a volume over time. And so yeah, the file sizes themselves get quite large. There's lots of different proprietary file formats, so it's very challenging. It's a bit of a moving target to try and support everything. Yeah, as well as there's sort of extra metadata and information stored alongside the image. So you've got not just the kind of the image sort of sensor information, but you've got metadata about the patients, the devices, timestamps, all those kinds of things bundled in.
Well, it sounds like a very complex task that you guys have to filter through. So when you're dealing with cleansing, there's one thing about cleansing the data, identifying all the outliers, and I'm assuming you're using machine deep learning, and deep learning can be tricky because based upon the images that you send it, if they're not formatted right, neural nets tend to cheat and it'll memorize things instead of knowing the distinction. So I'm thinking of a situation like a chest X-ray where it has, you can see somebody's heart and you can see somebody's lungs. So I'm curious, what techniques do you guys use in situations like that where you have to zoom in, remove all the unimportant parts? Is this something that you guys are using, maybe image data generator? I'm trying to see.
Yeah, there's lots of different ways to doing it, and it kind of depends on how much effort you want to go into, I guess. Part of the pre-step before you can actually start training a model is sort of annotating all of your images, making sure that they're correctly labeled, but also you sort of put on either bounding boxes or defined regions of interest so that when you're training your model, you're telling it where to look at, where to focus on. So simple things as yeah, drawing a box around the lung and saying, this is a lung. Even better is to create like a segmentation mask where you're sort of literally drawing around that, more like a polygon or a kind of a kind of like an image mask, I guess, or kind of a tracing around it. And those are usually a lot better, but they're also really time consuming to actually create. Especially again, when we're talking about medical images, because it's not something that you can give any person to say draw around a specific region within the body, because most medical images are not exactly clear, or you need to obviously be trained to know exactly where the regions are, or the edges of an organ, for example. And so what we're talking about is, yeah, radiologists, clinicians that actually need to do this annotation, and typically they're not, they're fairly time poor individuals. They're not really looking to, draw boxes around thousands and thousands of hearts. So it's a very time consuming, expensive process to pull together, to annotate these types of data sets and to pull them all together. And so part of what we do is really help speed up that process, part through visualization, but we also have annotation tools as well that go alongside it.
Okay, that sounds good. So you annotate the data, you cleanse it with, you parse it with all the needed stuff, the unnecessary stuff you purge, and you go into actually training the model. How do you go about validating that what you train is actually accurate?
Yeah, there's lots of different ways to do that, and again, we mostly do that through visualization and allowing you to really fully understand and explore the outputs from your model. Some like the most common ways of doing that is sort of a confusion matrix. You can look at your false positives and negatives against your classes. Mm-hmm. You can use that to generate a simple F score, but that doesn't always tell you, you know, everything about your model, and it may, you know, on average be performing really well, but there might still be kind of minorities and sort of smaller underrepresented classes within your data where it sort of does underperform. And so what we do is sort of, you know, take, you can take all your sort of confidence scores that come out from your models, visualize them in kind of a multi-dimensional way, and then you can zoom in and sort of highlight those areas where it may be, you know, underperforming. So we just sort of really help you to easily identify those types of outliers or those types of data issues. And so really, I mean, we always try to keep the human in the loop throughout the whole process. So we're not wanting or wanting to sort of generate a magic number that says, look, your model is 100% A+. What we want to do is really let the experts to be able to understand fully through being fully transparent with the data so that they can sort of sign off and understand the workings of a model.
Okay. So after, let's say you see, okay, this model is 97% accuracy, accurate. Do you guys do any explainability for the clinicians? Because, okay, they go, like the health field is highly audited and regulated. So yeah, if a doctor is saying, okay, just feed it in, yes, it predicted that a patient had X, Y, and Z, do we just blindly go by it? Or if they're auditing, can they pull out features that when the deep learning was learning stuff, it was able to map like the feature map of the images or what features they were able to distinguish one condition from another? Do you guys also provide that to the users?
Yeah, we generate these sort of explainability heat maps. And so what that lets you do is sort of overlay kind of like a heat map over the top of the images. And what that shows is sort of regions where the model is sort of being activated, or think of it like where it's looking at, where it's focusing on within an image to make its decision. And so by overlaying that, you can sort of get that bigger sense of a picture as to where it might be, you know, going wrong. I think you mentioned earlier, it all comes down to the data, and models like to shortcut and cheat at times. And uh-huh. That's where the explainability heat maps can really help find, you know, those situations where it is going wrong.
Okay. All of this sounds very exciting. do you have a demo you can show us to better understand how the Zagami solution works, especially with images or three-dimensional type of images?
I do, yeah. Okay. I've got a little bit of a demo that put together. Actually, it's a chest X-ray example. But it's very much based quite topically on COVID. So it's looking at chest X-rays that, and so the idea is that we would want to build up a data set to build a classifier for looking at COVID, but also other types of chest conditions, whether it's pneumonia or even healthy. So what you're seeing here is our main interface, and already you can see that Zagami is quite unique in that we can display, you know, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, or even hundreds of thousands of images all on the screen at once. But we give you this sort of big bird's eye overview of all of them. So it's not just one image at a time, but it's many images. But at the same time, you can still zoom in and see all the detail about each individual one. I've just clicked on one here, and actually you can also see all the metadata that's associated with it. And, you know, to feed in the images into Zagami, it could either be from images you might have from a PAC system, from a file system. I mean, these ones came from actually Microsoft's DICOM medical imaging server and to the Fire service as well for the metadata. But Zagami lets you sort of pull in and join and look at multiple data sets, whether it's structured and unstructured, all at once. And where that becomes really interesting and useful for Zagami is that you can then use that metadata to filter and start to explore this data set in a very visual way. So I've just sort of picked one of the columns in my data set and selected all the COVID lungs. And you can see then it all updates and only just shows me all of those lungs that have been labeled as COVID. But you can see it just sort of updates straight away. But we also have this concept of views, and what that allows you to do is sort of show different sort of facets and aspects of the data very easily. I've switched now over to what we call the graph view, which shows a distribution now across any of the dimensions we have in our data set. In this case, it's age. And why this is interesting is that actually in this data set, it highlights that there's actually an age bias here. So this is sort of showing the distribution from you know, very young to very old individuals, but actually you can see most of the images are from individuals from age 50 and above.
I'm curious at this part, do things like age matter? Like, let's say for a heart disease type of situation, whether it's a child or an adult, do you guys see the difference between a condition, or you guys just provide the metadata for the clinician to have background information about the data?
Yeah, exactly. We sort of provide that means so that then the expert, the clinician, can come in and make that call. So in that case, you know, maybe it is completely fine that there are, you know, the majority of older patients, and actually even you might want to then go ahead and just exclude everyone below 50 because you just know, well, they're sort of out of our parameters or out of bounds. We know that we're not going to be, you know, running the model against younger individuals. And so you kind of remove that, again, that bias from the training data set.
Exactly.
So the idea is to have your data as well representative as possible, whether it's age, but we're also talking, you know, across all the demographics, whether it's, you know, gender, you know, ethnicity, but also even down to the type of device that was used to capture the images. So certain devices can have or impart various sort of artifacts in an image, or even have additional pre and post image processing steps that can cause noise or difference in contrast. And all these things can upset models in really unusual ways. So diversity and kind of well representativeness is sort of key. And that's why tools like Zagami make it easy to help you to kind of get through and understand where you might be lacking in your data.
Okay.
One of the other things, actually, I was just going to jump over, we have a map view, which is really interesting, again, because it can be quite difficult to visualize sort of spatial relationships between data. In this case, this is sort of showing all the areas within the UK where the images were collected. And again, you can see actually there's sort of a geographic bias here in that there's not many examples from Wales in this case. And right. So that again could potentially be a bias within the data set.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of getting back to the visual side of things, we actually use unsupervised techniques as well to cluster images based on visual similarity. And so this scatter plot view here is sort of showing you various clusters that have been found automatically. And again, this can be a really nice way of quickly cleaning up your data set. You can sort of find these, you can select them and lasso them and tag them, mm-hmm. and use that to add additional metadata. One thing this is highlighting is that you can see actually there's a spread or differences in contrast between the images, where there's sort of a lot of low contrast images over on the left and high contrast on the right. And that's again down to either technique or the way that the images have been captured that sort of added those contrast differences.
What type of tooling, I'm curious, that you guys use for these dimensionalized analytics to be able to grab these images and intelligently put it into like a cluster graphical viewable way for the user to look at?
Yeah, so we've got, I guess there's various ways that you can get data into Zagami. The most common is either through we have a sort of a creation wizard, a user interface, mm-hmm. Where you can sort of drag and drop data into them. But also we have an API and an SDK as well, so you can sort of integrate it into your own pipelines or sort of VNA, sort of DICOM-based image servers to pull the images from them into Zagami.
Awesome.
We then use sort of, you know, we're running in Azure. We then use the cloud to pre-process all the images, to extract various features and do these kinds of dimensionality reduction steps to do the clustering like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned being able to look at confusion metrics. How is that done?
Yeah. One of the ways that we do that is that you can sort of select and look at kind of these estimates. So this is what it's doing is if you have a model that can, say, predict or kind of calculate a score of between 0 and 1, whether you've got COVID or not, you can then put that across the axis in our graph view. But then you can overlay the actual kind of predicted class over the top as a color. Mm-hmm. And so what this is showing then is the kind of the level of confusion or kind of the intermixing between the classes, given the confidence here. So in the COVID example, you can see there's a fairly nice separation that most of the ones to the right are orange, which is the COVID in this case, and most of the others are between, you know, 0 and 5% confidence. So it's quite good. But you can look at, I think is it bacterial pneumonia, mm-hmm. which is blue. But you can see that there's actually a kind of a lot of mixing between the blue and the red classes here, and it's not as clear between you know, the right and the left side. So it's sort of showing you that it's not as confident differentiating between bacterial and viral pneumonia in this case.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually see that even further if I was to add viral pneumonia across here. And sort of reduce the number of bins, you sort of get a similar thing, but across those two classes.
Okay.
So it sort of creates a confusion matrix in a way, but then you can actually dive in and see each individual data point rather than it just being summarized into a single value.
Okay. So are you able to see the actual conditions versus what the model was able to predict? And from there, it'll be able to know how accurate it is?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So you can overlay kind of the prediction, which I think is this one here, this top estimate. I'll just remove this column here to sort of see that. So sort of looking at the estimated class versus the confidence score. And again, you can then see that it's quite clear that separation here, in this case between bacterial pneumonia and some of the other cases.
Wow. Well, Roger, this is super, super awesome. I think there's a difference between explaining something and actually seeing how it is done in action. And you guys are truly giving the end user the holistic view of their data and also providing extra metadata for them to use in their decision making. Do you have any parting words to share with the audience based upon your experience, like the future of AI in the health industry and innovations that you're seeing that we are coming up in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I'm super optimistic about the future of AI and health. I think it's something that's really needed. There's only, there's decreasing numbers of radiologists out there. There's more people, and as well as COVID really highlighted the need and to really streamline the processes to sort of help with triaging, patients as they come in, so that clinicians can really focus their time on the problem cases rather than the ones that are completely fine. And so AI is really well placed to help with that. But then there's also quite a lot of challenges to overcome. One is just understanding and explaining AI, because that's really important. You don't want to just get a single sick or healthy score. You need to know why it came to that decision, in the same way that you can sort of interrogate a doctor as to why they think you're sick. But not only that, there's lots of issues, really important issues around bias, especially around ethnicity, around age, around gender, that really need to be addressed. And we need to make sure that our training data sets, our validation data sets, are really well representative. But not only that, that we're sort of continually testing and validating our models, not just once we've developed them, but also locally when they're in production. So that we can be sure that a model's accuracy and performance is the same if I run it here in the UK or in the US or somewhere else in the world, that that the model is going to perform the same way. And so there's still, I think, a long ways to we sort of fully understand how best to do that, and really how best to understand the life cycle of AI, and also make sure that they're safe to use.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Roger, for this exceptional conversation and
No
showing
worries.
us the exceptional work that you guys are doing at Exigami and also the demo that you had to share with us. For the viewers, if you want to continue this conversation, be sure to follow us at Tech Exceptions at Twitter. And post any questions that you have, and we'll be sure to answer any questions you have. Or if you need us to bring Roger in to answer some of your questions, we can do that. And I think, Roger, your Twitter is in your title, right?
At Roger underscore Noble.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining today, and we're looking forward to meeting you guys in the next episode next week. Bye.